Blog Talk Radio.
The screen door slams, Mary's dress waves. Like a vision, she dances across the porch as the radio plays. Roy Orbison singing for the lonely. Hey, that's me and I want you only. Don't turn me home again, I just can't face myself alone again. Don't run back inside, darling, you know just what I'm here for. So you're scared and you're thinking that maybe we ain't that young.
To the Matthew Aaron Show. I am Matthew Aaron, www.thematthewaaronshow.com, at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter. On Facebook, you go to the search bar and you type in the Matthew Aaron Show and you click like, and that'll get you liking us. And Stitcher, You can listen to us on Stitcher. You can listen to us on your mobile devices at Blog Talk Radio or Stitcher as well. Basically, all you got to do is go to the website, www.thematthewaronshow.com, and you can find about 50 different ways to listen to us. I'm Matthew Aaron.
Lee Capreas, hello.
Lee Capreas.
Nice of you to not have to make me fight for it this time.
You're welcome.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Joining you as always.
You know, we...
At Lee Capreas on Twitter.
Oh, there you go. I just played Thunder Road in honor of James Gandolfini, who passed during our show last week.
Yeah.
Which threw me off.
I hope nobody dies during our show this week.
Man, that sucked.
Yeah.
That was really bad.
Yeah.
You
were in this kind of a fit because you were telling our last week's guest Christopher Showerman, you're like just yeah so go on all right so you're so you you work you do some cardio and then you're yeah just, all right so you're a lot of protein. Well, how do you get your okay you get your carbohydrates that way? All right,
I was like, really thrown off.
Yeah,
it was really tough to do that interview. Uh-huh. But I think we recovered and I think we did really well in hindsight. And what I wanted to talk about real quick before we start with our first guest, Doug Jones, who is, of course, well, you know him from a lot of films and TV, Falling Skies, but, of course, also Hellboy.
Yeah.
And not my favorite movie, but my favorite character, Silver Surfer. So this is intimidating for me.
That's
I'm
right.
Sitting in front of a comic book hero to me. And, of course, he's one of Guillermo del Toro's go-to guys, and he's one of my favorite directors. And probably the nicest guy in Hollywood from every story I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Like the nicest. No joke. When I watch Guillermo del Toro make a film, I hope it's successful whether I'm into it or not, just because he's a great guy. That's how I feel about a guy like that. That's great to hear. Real quick, though, I want to tell you a story. John Hughes. Before I forget.
Yeah.
And then we'll go right into Doug
here. Because this is worth noting.
Well, I was talking today about how, you know, after this luxurious career we have here in L.A., I'd like to retire in Wisconsin. Get
uh-huh.
a little, like, cabin, uh-huh. sit down, you know, read all day and drink on a boat, you know? And John Hughes ended up really doing that. He disappeared from Hollywood, and I don't know the reason, but I do know one story. Back in, like, 93, 94, John had literally, like, three movies out at one time. John took his daughter to go see the movie, one of their movies, in Westwood. They went to Westwood and to see one of the movies because he wanted to give his daughter a real movie-going experience. They
right.
stood in line. He could have cut in line. They stood in line. They paid for tickets, everything, the whole nine yards. They're in the theater, and a friend of mine, the reason I know this story is a friend of mine who's a famous director, who I won't out him with this story on the show, but he sat next to him at the movie.
Uh-huh.
He went as well. He went to go see it. And there was this woman behind him who did not know who John Hughes was, did not know who John Hughes looked like, whatever. It's a nice African-American woman who's seeing this John Hughes film. And during the John Hughes film, there's two trailers for two more John Hughes films coming out. And she goes, I've had enough of this fucking guy. Who does he think he is? Everything's a John Hughes movie right in front of his daughter. They have no idea. They have no idea they're right there. And just tearing into him for like 5 minutes. She's like, oh, another white boy movie. What a shock. Like, she was totally Mystery Science Theatering through these trailers on John Hughes, right in front of the guy.
Right.
How awful.
Yeah.
I mean, that would make me go to Wisconsin and get away from the business,
oh,
too.
Oh, man. I thought you were going to say something way worse.
No, like, but you overheard. Take your daughter to your own movie, a nice little treat, and, you know, go out with your daughter for the night.
Right.
When you're a really busy guy.
Yeah.
And then you just get bashed on for, like, 10 minutes before the movie.
Well, when were there... I mean, at that point, there were more movies for that woman to see than there ever were.
Maybe she was a critic. I don't know.
Maybe.
But
by the way, so far during the course of the show, Michael Kenneth Williams has died.
Oh, stop it. That's a lie. No. Alive and well. All right. So we are joined here by Doug Jones. Doug sat through my John Hughes story.
I love that.
Very
John
nice
Hughes.
Of him, though.
I love that whole John
Don't
Hughes.
You love stories like that, though,
I
as
do.
As awful as they are? The Hollywood stories about, like, real-life Hollywood, those are the fun ones.
Yeah, exactly.
The business stories blow. They're depressing. They're
yeah.
depressing.
Right.
Doug, you've been in this business so long. I mean, you've been acting. Wait, I was reading your bio. I got to say, was it 85 or something? Mid-80s, right?
I got my first job in 86. Yeah,
86.
27 years now or something. Crazy.
Man,
like that. Yeah.
Well, you look really young.
Well, that's,
yeah.
Thank you. You're
so
very kind.
Is it the L.A. Sun or something?
Yeah.
What's going on?
drink lots of water.
I'm at my high school weight. And guess it, I'm 6'3" and a half. And I weigh 140 pounds. I never gained a pound.
I'm 165 and I'm like 5'7". That makes me feel fat.
No. I'm the freak of nature. In fact, but the thing is, like you mentioned the Silver Surfer earlier.
Yeah.
When people know me from that and they don't know who played the Silver Surfer and they meet me at a convention.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
They're kind of surprised.
Are they thrown off a little?
Well, there's this skinny, emaciated looking old man sitting there. And they're like, well,
they were expecting The Rock, Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah, but I get asked all the time, like, are you feeling okay? How are the treatments coming?
Yeah.
Along?
Yeah. You were great in Shame.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
Well, and so I'm just like, okay, so you've been doing this a long time. What was your first gig? How'd you get it? How'd you know you wanted to be an actor? Give me like the run through on that.
I was a kid back in Indiana watching TV.
You're a Midwest guy, like us. Okay.
So the Dick Van Dyke Show, I Love Lucy, Mary Tyler Moore Show,
great,
Carol Burnett Show.
Yeah.
Watching that kind of television is what made me go, and seeing goofy people having a career, like Don Knotts as Barney Fife on Mayberry, RFD,
right.
or Gilligan,
Bob Denver,
Gomer Pyle, Jim.
Were they guys that kind of reminded you of yourself?
Of myself, abso-frickin-lutely.
Yeah.
And so when I,
because I could see a little, Don Knotts.
Don Knotts.
Well, there is a little Don Knotts.
Yeah, and when I was younger and he was like at the height of his fame, I got Don Knotts all the time.
Did you?
Like, oh, you should be on TV. You're just
Mr. Roper.
You're just like, yeah, exactly. That's totally, yeah. Exactly. The older I get, the more ropery I get.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's true.
So you get your first gig. So you knew you wanted to be an actor.
Yeah.
Do you audition? Is this in Indiana when you get your first gig? What'd you do?
Well, I became a mime back in Indiana. I went to college at Ball State.
You were a mime?
I will believe. Yes. I don't know. We don't talk
at
about
Ball State?
We don't talk about this in public.
Yeah. You don't talk about it at all.
No, but nobody likes mimes.
Were you a mime at Ball State?
I was. That's where I learned how to, the art form of mime was at Ball State University.
So they have an undergrad mime program.
I just want to know if you got picked on a lot.
No. Even by college, people were more mature then.
Sure, they were.
Unlike the host of this show.
Yeah, right.
But at Ball State, thank you. I joined a mime troupe called Mime Over Matter.
Get it?
Okay, ho!
So between the mime troupe and also I auditioned for and got the I was the school mascot. I was Charlie Cardinal for the basketball season. Yeah.
Oh wow.
So wearing a big red bird suit, I was learning a lot about physicality and telling a story without using verbal dialogue. But both those
that's important.
So that I did not have a clue what preparation that was going to be for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Because
that's all acting is reacting.
Yeah, kind of.
I mean, delivering lines. Who cares?
Yeah, right. So when I got to L.A. with those things on my resume, and also
what made you make the move?
I knew I wanted to be out in L.A. all my life. I watched TV and wanted to be on it one day. That's what started. So
it was a lot cheaper back then.
And in 1985, when we made the move, it was cheaper. And I got a job as a bank management trainee. I flew out here on my own dime to an interview with the bank, and they took me on. And we moved back. I packed up the missus and the cat, and I put everything in the car. And I did this bank job for 8 months, and then they fired me because I suck at banking. And you put a creative person in a suit and tie, holding a wad of keys, and supervising tellers. That's just a square peg.
So wait, what part of your resume said banker?
None of it.
They just hired you on a whim.
Right. No, my college degree was I majored in radio and TV broadcasting. I had a minor in theater.
Someone
that's
thought,
a banker.
Well, he has nimble, dexterous fingers to rifle through a lot of bills.
Right, exactly. There was no connection with it. But I interviewed well. And I had those Midwestern work values and work ethics. But oh god,
that is. Let me tell you. Let me ask you about that. It's funny you bring that up. We talk about this on the show
all the time. I'll bet
Midwestern people.
Yeah,
they come out to L.A.
Yeah,
like,
and they realize
the
how slow things are out here compared to how you are trained to work. Was that for you too? Like you're waiting weeks for something to go through. Weeks for a gig. You're like, what is going
on here?
Yeah.
Right. That snapped to it,
so
people.
So was that like in the 80s in L.A. too, in the 90s?
Yeah,
was it just
as
slow?
I think it was that there's that California sense of entitlement and like you don't have to work. Aren't things
they want
to
do
here?
European stuff?
You have rich, wealthy, famous parents, and they give you stuff.
Right.
I mean, that's how it's supposed to go, right?
It's just sort of like attitude, like work is for squares. I just want to have fun.
Exactly.
You know, like,
yeah.
So what did you do to pass the time while you're auditioning and stuff? Did you get an agent right away?
After the bank fired me, I got an agent right away. Yeah, I took a TV commercial workshop, And after my second class, he said, "Do you have an agent yet?" And I said, "What is an agent?" Well, I picked my nose. And he said, "Here's my card. Call me at the office." So, so I was auditioning, a couple times a week, and then.
How many gigs do you think you'd get out of per audition?
What
was the ratio?
1 in 30.
That's
the average. Now, I got that down to about 1 in 10 by the time I was at the height of
that's
my commercial
when you know you're
career.
Good.
Yeah, that's when you know you're
when
good.
When you get 1 in 10, you're good. Yeah. You could do it for a living.
Exactly.
Right.
So, so I started with TV commercials.
Commercials?
My first paid gig that when I got my Screen Actors Guild card was I was a dancing mummy for a Southwest Airlines spot. Yes, I was. And that was kind of boding of things to come.
Why do people want to cover you up?
I don't know.
Fitting thing to be a mascot for an airline.
I know. He started out as
slow,
a mascot.
Lurching mummy.
But right, that's funny because that is Southwest.
Exactly, right.
Yeah.
But it's funny. You start out Ball State. You're Cardinals, right?
Yes.
So you're wearing a Cardinal.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, no one sees your face.
No, of course not.
Then your first gig you get, you're a mummy. No one sees your face.
No.
Head to toe in Silver bandages. Surfer, Abe Sibian. Yeah. No one sees you. Right. No, why does no one want to see your face, Doug?
I don't. He's perfect. Put a mask on him.
Exactly.
Now you're an alien.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a face only a mother could love. A face for radio. Shortly after that Southwest Airlines commercial, because of the mime background and the movement thing, and I'm also on my resume says contortionist because I can put my legs behind my head. I'm a one trick pony. I don't travel with Cirque du Soleil or anything.
If you can do that, because that's more contortion than anyone else can do. So you might as well get the title. You know how to play a little bit of banjo, you can play the banjo.
So with that all that physical stuff on your resume, people think, well, he's perfect to cover up and do a monster. So I didn't know that was a career option, but it turned into one. And one of my early gigs after the Southwest Airlines spot was the Mac Tonight campaign for McDonald's.
I remember that. Moon face guy?
Get off
my roof. I'm trying to go to sleep.
Yeah, that's the guy. I was the one with the moon head with the sunglasses on, sang at a piano. When the clock strikes, half past six, babe. Yeah, that was me. Yeah, McDonald's, good Chicago-based company.
That's
thank
right.
you very much.
That's right.
Okay.
They are Oakbrook.
Yeah, that's right.
McDonald's.
So I did 27 commercials as that character over a 3-year period. So
did that pay?
I bought my first house with that campaign. So,
wow.
They
don't make those kind of campaigns
anymore,
you got 27 of the same character.
They do not.
And they don't happen anymore.
I mean,
there's very, very few.
I can't think of one where it's like that.
Dos Equis guy.
Yeah, Dos Equis.
The progressive insurance lady
girl,
who wears too much makeup.
Can you hear me now, guy?
No, I'm totally wrong. Allstate. I'm completely wrong.
There's some people, but I'm saying that the commercial world has changed. The entertainment has changed with the advent of the Webernet that we're talking on right now.
Yeah.
Right. So let me ask you, you and Andy Serkis, you hate each other?
No.
you hate each other, right?
If I could recount how many times I get this question. Like,
you're the CGI guy. I'm the mask guy.
Right.
I just did a Reddit in AMA like last week, and one of the main questions that kept getting asked is, who would win in a fight, you or Andy Serkis?
Oh, no, I don't care about the fight. I just care how much you hate him.
No, not even close.
Have you ever competed against each other for a job?
Never. We've never been pitted against each other for a job. He and I are different. Well, he's shorter and more solidly built than I am. I'm a tall, lanky, skinny guy. We're not going to be up for the same part. But we get asked about each other in interviews
all the
time.
You say something respectful, like, well, I respect Andy. I would love to work alongside him, and I wish him all the best, but I take that little bit.
Actually, he would totally decimate me if we got into a fist fight. But
he's built.
Yeah.
Huh?
He's totally built, yeah.
Yeah.
Last year at Comic-Con in San Diego, that's when we finally met for the first time.
Really?
After being talked about by each
other. Did he say to you, I hear about Doug Jones all the time?
Yeah, no. Well, here's how it went down. We were at an after party. And someone said, I'm so nervous. I don't know what to say to Andy Serkis. I said, why are you worried? He's not here. He's right behind you. I'm like, so after 10 years of hearing about each other and getting questions about each other in interviews, we're about to meet for the first time. This is like a historic moment in the world of geekdom. So I turn around, and he had just finished a conversation with somebody. He turns around, looks at me, and I said, Andy, Doug Jones. He threw his head back, closed his eyes, opened his arms, and we hugged and giggled for 7 minutes. It was absolutely a wonderful,
That is a delightful story.
That's a great story.
I love it.
That's how it went down.
Were you like trying to talk, but then you just go back to giggling?
You just go back to giggling. Yeah.
All the nerds were disappointed.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Yeah, they were watching their two like rivals
I thought
hug.
It was going to be some kind of a fight.
You like going to the Comic Cons and stuff?
I love it.
Okay,
yes.
But you get treated like a celebrity, though. You know, so you don't have to smell the BO and the virginity in the room.
Of course, all that comes with a Comic Con. You know, they have a little comic book and sci-fi fantasy conventions all over the country.
Did one recently.
Yeah. All your, you know. So I love going, having a safe forum to meet the people who bought my house for me.
Yeah, right. That's
what I love.
And it is a lot better to go, though. As someone who's been there as a fan and now as a panel host, I much rather go as a panel host. They sneak you in. You meet everybody still. You go, hey, how you doing? How you doing? Which is great.
Yeah.
But you don't have to walk through all the crowds and elbow people.
Right.
And like, that's crazy.
Well, what's fun for me, because I'm known for being like covered in rubber a lot. My real
You're
face.
You're a dominatrix's dream.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So for me to go walk through San Diego Comic-Con, there's 150,000 people down there that all watch DVD bonus features. They've all seen my interviews. They actually do know
that's the
crowd that knows my face.
Yeah.
So I can't walk 5 feet there without hearing, Doug Jones, love your work, man. Woo! You know, so that I get to be a rock star for 1 weekend a year.
That's
and then I go home and like sitting here right now at Taste Chicago, nobody knows who the crap I am.
By the way, 603 North Hollywood Way, Taste Chicago, Joe Mantegna and Arlene Mantegna's restaurant.
Right.
A little rumor, Joe watched the final Blackhawks game where they won the cup from Cigars and Stripes.
Did he now?
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And you know, Joe Mantegna, I worked with him on Criminal Minds.
He's great.
I guest starred on an episode and we were face to face. And
he's an
intense actor. He's wonderful.
Yeah, he's great. He's going to be back, I think, next week, and hopefully stops in.
This is sort of the second time in a very recent period where we said something like, oh, Comic-Con, those nerds, huh? And the person was like, no, actually, they're great. I'm like a hero there.
I do think they're great. Judith Hogue was the same way, right. Right,
no,
they're
great.
But, yeah, no, I think they're great, too. It's just going there, it's just so crowded.
No, it's very crowded. And you find a certain zealous spirit there of people that just
you don't
live
find that
in
any
breathe.
Other convention.
You
right.
don't.
Yeah.
You don't. It's like a religion.
It's
this is
fun.
People make save their
I
vacation
do get
dollars.
A little creeped out by like all the big guns and stuff people carry around. The
cosplayers.
I mean, I know they're toys.
The cosplayers. Yeah.
Cosplayers. That kind is like, okay, you stand over there, I'll go over this way.
Well, none of my characters have been gunslingers as much. So here's the compliment. When I'm sitting at an autograph table and up walks a Billy Butcherson from Hocus Pocus.
Sure.
That's my character. Or up walks an Abe Sapien from the Hellboy movies. Or up walks a Silver Surfer.
Yeah.
That's such a great homage to like my career when somebody takes the time to put their own costume together. And it takes, and those are not easy ones to pull together.
Right.
Either.
Now, has anyone walked up to you and said, because they knew your face and stuff, but maybe they thought they saw you on TV too? Did anyone ever say they loved you on Frasier? No? Yes? No?
I used to get
David Hyde Pierce.
I didn't get that. Because he voiced over me in the first Hellboy movie,
right?
But now that's my voice in Hellboy 2.
It is yours.
That is.
No, see,
yes.
I knew it.
Yeah.
I knew it.
And
that's
also
right.
as the Angel of Death character in Hellboy 2. That's my voice. So David was quite a gentleman. The studio made that decision ahead of time.
Yeah. Why didn't David do the second one then? Or was it just something?
He was not. First of all, he wasn't interested in doing the first one once he heard my original performance. There was no reason to voice over me, and he said so. He backed away from his voice session and said, what am I doing here? So it was very kind. And because of that, he refrained from taking a credit in the film. He didn't show up at the premiere, no red carpet coverage, no interviews, no press, nothing.
That's classic.
And when asked why, he said it's out of respect to Doug Jones. Now, that is a classic.
That is really classic.
And I never would have asked someone to do that for me.
So
that,
classic.
He certainly could have taken credit for what he did. But he was just that kind of a guy. And
the studio really thought it was going to matter that much to have a name guy do a voice.
And at that time I wasn't, and he was a name. So now, by the time Hellboy 2 came around,
you were a name.
I'd done Pan's Labyrinth by then and everything.
All for people sitting in the theater like, man, another red guy movie.
Right.
How many of those are there?
Did anyone say to you with Pan's Labyrinth, did anyone come up to you and be like, I showed my kids that movie, they can't sleep, thanks a lot, Doug?
Yeah,
but
they loved it.
know, when they hear fairy tale, they think, oh, let's take the kid.
Right.
Right.
And watch a guy get smashed in the face with a bottle.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Or let's watch a woman in labor bleed all over the floor.
Right.
Yeah. No, it's an intense movie. Yeah.
What's it like working with Guillermo? How did Guillermo discover you?
Right.
Like, in it, but Guillermo discovery. Not that you weren't working before that, but what Guillermo go,
no.
Doug Jones, that's my guy.
We discovered each other on on Mimic.
Oh, really?
What
that is an underrated movie.
It
I like Mimic.
Is.
Except for the third act, which we've read the book. Guillermo didn't get his edit he would have liked.
Exactly.
No.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, no, he was that was his first American studio film.
Right.
His first time. Yeah, so I didn't know who he was. He didn't know who I was when we met each other on that. I was his bug guy for 3 days during their L.A. pickup shooting. They did their principal photography up in Toronto, up in Canada. And the actor who played the bug guys up there couldn't work here, didn't have a visa.
Right.
So they're doing pickup shots. I'm like, oh, look, who do we know? Oh, let's get that Doug Jones. By then, I'd known the creature shot people in town. So they referred me. And the second day, I was worked on it for 3 days. My second day, I sat across the lunch table from Guillermo del Toro.
That's great.
And he put his chin in his hands and he said, tell me everything you've been in before. So I told him all the movies and creatures I'd played. Oh, what kind of monster was that? Oh, yeah? And who did the makeup on that? Oh, is he a nice guy? Yeah.
Is he a nice guy?
He's doing scouting.
That's just it. He wanted to know what kind of people were these. Like,
that's
and he, I had been done Hocus Pocus by then, and he said, oh, that was Tony Gardner, right? Yes, it was Tony Gardner. Is he nice as he seems? Yeah, is he? And but, yeah, yes, he was. We're still friends to this day. Oh, that's good to hear.
Are you better friends with Tony than Bette Midler?
I love Bette. I love Bette.
Everyone says they love Bette, and then you hear shit in the news that's like Bette's an ass.
She was great in Mimic. Come on.
No,
you know who's great in Hocus Pocus? You know who's got to be a great girl is Kathy Najimy.
Kathy Najimy
right?
is a dream
she's
to work
the best,
with.
Right?
And
okay.
she's hilarious
okay. yeah,
on
right.
and off camera.
She's great.
Yeah,
okay.
yeah, yeah, yeah. But anyway, but Guillermo, we connected on this monster level. You know,
there's some great actors in the first Mimic too. Did you get to meet
Mira
like Josh
Sorvino
Brolin and Mira Sorvino? Giancarlo
Jeremy
Giannini
Northam.
Is one of my favorite actors ever.
Yeah,
ever.
Really?
Yeah, I love him.
Why am I just hearing about this for the first time?
I never told you that before.
No.
Oh
man,
you kids
I
need to work
him.
This out.
Oh,
should I step aside?
Yeah. No.
Okay.
Come on, he's the greatest Italian actor of all time. I would think.
Okay.
From Italy.
All
From
right.
Italy. Who's better?
Marcello?
No.
Marcello Mastroianni's not better?
No. And your boyfriend's in Mimic, F. Murray Abraham. You do your F. Murray impression all the time.
Yeah, well.
It's a good one.
Yeah, right.
Slightly offensive.
Slightly offensive, yeah. But he's... Hey, man, he's...
So you guys meet on Mimic.
We did.
And then how does he remember you then for Hellboy? How does that happen?
Five years later. What happened was it was the Creature Effects makeup team that had worked with me. All the Creature Effects people in town know me by now, by 2002.
Okay.
And so they just took Ket of Abe Sapien for the first Hellboy movie. Guillermo comes in to approve this new design. And legend has it, when he saw the maquette, the statue that was going to be the dimensions of Abe Sapien, that he fell to his knees and said, oh, I am so fat.
by the way, Doug Guillermo del Toro impression I can listen to for hours at a
good.
Time. Hours at a time.
Thank you.
So he falls to his knees. That's how fat he is.
Yeah.
Poor
and right, and then that's what brought the discussion of this long, lean statue looking at. So Steve Wang, who designed this movie character off of Mike Mignola's artwork, and
Wow, what a great artist!
Oh my gosh! and then Mike Elizalde, who ran the Spectral Motion Creature Shop, and Jose Fernandez, who actually did the sculpting.
All really talented guys.
All talented guys, and they'd all worked with me before, and they all conferred. You know who's perfect to play this role? Guillermo would be Doug Jones. That's when Guillermo said, "Doug Jones, I know Doug Jones. He saved my ass one night." So what he was referring to was a night on Mimic. They were the producers. My third day of working on Mimic wasn't supposed to happen because the producers tried to get me and they wanted me to come back as an extra, like to do an extra's voucher.
You've been working as a day player every day.
Yeah. We need you to walk by in a crowd.
Yeah, yeah.
Listen, Harvey called. We need to cut the budget about $750.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. Seriously, it was that important, really, to insult me. So I passed, and what happened was they did get an extra from an extra's agency to come.
Yeah.
Put on the bug suit and walk on a treadmill. That's all he had to do was walk on a treadmill in front of a green screen. They were going to do something with that later. The thank heaven they found the one extra in L.A. that didn't know how to walk on a treadmill.
Right? Yeah. No.
I go to the gym every night. They all know how to walk on a treadmill.
No, who doesn't
know?
Who?
Yeah, right.
Right, right. So then I get this desperate phone call.
I can't even imagine that.
Yeah, no, I know. It's after dark. It was a night shoot at downtown L.A. outdoors with the green sky. I don't know why. But so I get this desperate phone call about midnight. Doug, okay, this is the producer so-and-so again. I know we discussed this before. Can you come down now? We'll pay you whatever. Please, get down here. So I went down. They wrapped him for the night. Didn't let him know why they were wrapping him.
Yeah, right. And then he's like, oh, that was good? I'm good? All right, I'll see you guys later.
Good night, you guys. Can't wait for the movie to come out. Yeah. Get me in there. Now, son, I had no idea what had happened. I just felt like they changed their minds, and I didn't know all this backstory. I get on the treadmill in the full makeup, and action. Walk, walk, walk. How hard is this, right? And I'm put a little bug behind it. And Guillermo yells, cut! And then the crew bursts out in applause. Guillermo lifts his hands to the sky, and he says, thank you, God! And I was like, what the frick? I walked on a treadmill. So he refers to that as the night I saved his ass.
No.
Yeah, so he remembered me 5 years later. Yeah,
I knew I liked him. Is one of those things. I knew I liked him when I was watching the commentary track for Blade 2, which is the best of the Blade movies.
He gives great commentary, by the way.
Yeah, they're great. And he's just like, yeah, this bordello is in England. We're going to call it Fuckingham Palace. And I like this director. I know I like this director.
I just know Carnahan's told me numerous times, Joe Carnahan, he's told me numerous times he's like the nicest guy ever. He loves him.
You know, everyone asks me, what's it like to work with Guillermo del Toro?
Yeah.
And I will tell you, you are in the presence of a genius, no question about it. And to be in that kind of royalty, you're in awe. But he is so disarming because he's like your best friend from college same time. And,
right.
And he's a geeky fanboy. He's a fanboy first.
Yeah.
So he knows what to make for the fanboys because he is one. That's why he makes such great movies that give you a geekgasm.
Right.
Know?
So you're doing Falling Skies now.
I am.
Okay. But Pacific Rim's coming out.
I know.
Now, was that something that you couldn't do because of scheduling or Guillermo just didn't ask you? Guillermo. Now let's trash him. He didn't ask you to do Pacific Rim?
Right.
If there was going to be a human being in a rubber suit or costume or makeup, he would have had me in the movie.
Oh, there's no rubber suit?
No,
Pacific Rim. Giant, spoiler. Spoiler.
Yeah, giant CG characters.
They couldn't use you for the battleship that the robots swing in that one scene?
He was doing Big Mama's House 4.
Let me tell you something about Pacific Rim, not to get away from Doug here promoting Falling Skies, which is on TNT now.
It is.
But season 3, Noah Wiley, Steven Spielberg, come on.
That's right.
Okay, but I watched this preview for Pacific Rim. And I'm like, okay, I love Ron Perlman. I love Charlie Hunnam. I love Idris Elba's great. Okay.
Yeah,
all right, I'm already in.
Yeah.
And it looks like an actual, like, good Transformers movie. So I'm in. But then I'm really in. There's this part where this big, huge robot takes a battleship and swings it like a baseball bat and hits another robot. And I'm like, yeah, I'm lining up.
You're in.
Yeah, tickets are bought.
Yeah, giant robots have been constructed to fight off the giant aliens. That's
right.
The storyline.
I'm in.
Yeah, and
I'm
that, in. That, I love it. All CG characters. That's why you
have
didn't
you
have
seen it yet? Have you been lucky enough?
No.
Okay,
I would love. I can't wait. Though.
So, Falling Skies. How do you get involved with this?
Right. Todd Masters, the creature effects makeup guru that does all the aliens on the show. He sent me a message on the Facebook last year.
I love it. The Facebook. I'm on it all the time.
Yeah, it was right
people
around.
Delete me on it every day.
Every day.
Every day.
So you know the Facebook.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So he sent me a message about a year ago right now saying, hey, we're developing a new character on the show. Would you be interested? Mm-hmm. I've been watching the show. I was a fan of it. I'm like, oh, my gosh. Yeah, that was like I started whacking off. It was that good. It ended up they put me in this Cochise character. So
you like that's an interesting name, Cochise.
Cochise.
Can we expect some similarities to
the Apache warrior?
Yeah.
No.
No. They just like the name.
And yet, yes, there's that human spirit that I can do anything. The underdog.
You are
rising
a villain.
Above.
Or no?
Well, no, I didn't.
Really?
I'm not at liberty to say.
Really?
But here's the thing. At the end of season 2 is when I was introduced, and that was like a spaceship lands, I step off, cut to black, roll credits.
Yeah, right.
Cliffhanger.
Right.
So season 3 picks up, episode 1 of season 3, 7 months later. So now, and you see me, the first time you see me in episode 1 is side by side with Noah Wiley on a horse shooting at the bad guy alien.
Really?
So we have some trust has been built in the last 7 months.
So we don't know, though, but we don't know if you're like a sleeper cell, if you will.
Right. Well, so far on this show, in the first two seasons, every alien you meet is a bad guy.
Yeah, right.
Needs to be run from, shot at, and cowered from. Wait. I land, and I'm the first alien that looks more humanish. I got two arms, two legs.
Right.
I'm about the right size, and I have a kind face. I kind of look like E.T.
Sure.
And
yes.
With Spielberg producing the show, that only makes sense.
Right.
So that right there is a visual connector. Like, the humans feel a little bit more comfortable with me than any of the other aliens on the show so far. Coupled with that I also hate the Ishvini, the bad aliens who have taken over Earth.
Yeah.
I have my own history with them. My people have our history with them. That's why we've come, to help the humans fight back. And you'll find this story unfolding.
So let me ask.
But the question remains, why? What's
why?
In it for me?
Right.
What's in it for
right.
me? Right.
Right. What do you get out of this whole thing?
Is Spielberg ever on set?
He didn't come on set while I was there this last season.
But he'll pop in every now and then. Well, I know he goes through like all the scripts
he's
and everything.
He's very,
very
actively involved. He reads every script. He has his notes. He watches the dailies. He has notes.
Our listeners know, I have two friends who've done movies with Steven. Steven.
Yeah.
And he will do like 40 projects at a time. No joke.
Yeah, yeah,
and he's involved
in
every single one of them.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Talk about a genius.
Yeah,
again.
He's nuts.
How do they do that?
Nuts. I couldn't do that.
I can't multitask.
It's not even multitask. How do you keep everything like compartmentalized, you know?
I don't know.
So let me tell you this. You were working with two actors I really, really, really respect. Noah Wiley, because I watched every season of ER.
Of ER. 20 years
every
of it,
season.
Right? Yeah.
He was phenomenal.
He was great.
You know, I'll tell you why I love Noah Wiley, because he's a guy when I was a kid I hated. I would watch ER and I go, he's a fucking brat. He's, you know, this young punk guy, whatever.
Right.
Give me more
right.
Clooney.
Right. Yeah.
Matt was born a cantankerous old man.
Right. And then he develops a drug problem on ER and they kind of humanize him. And I realized, and this is why I love the business, I realized that was the plan all along.
Right.
And
right.
I go, oh, damn. Okay. I get it.
Right.
I love him. And then Will Patton.
Will Patton.
Who I think is one of the coolest character actors.
He's such a cool
character,
yeah.
I think he's great.
Yeah.
I know he's a Bruckheimer staple. And
he's intense.
And
he's
a really intense guy. And he looks just like my uncle. So there's a little more love for that reason.
Yeah.
But I love Will Patton.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You're working with these guys.
Yeah.
Tell me about Noah Wiley, Will Patton. What's this like for you?
You mentioned those two people. Those are the two actors I interact the most with
right.
on the show. Because... Noah is the leader of his people. I'm the leader of mine, and we're here to help each other now. So I'm weak. All my scenes are with Noah, and Will Will Patton is his character, Colonel Weaver on the show now.
Yeah, he's like the right hand for Noah.
Right, and he's the kind of the naysayer and the one who's skeptical about everything. Tom, you sure we should be doing that?
Right.
And then Noah's the one that's like, hey, let's give this new alien a chance. So Noah's character like sides up with me and befriends me, and Will Patton is like, I don't know about this alien guy. So between the two of them,
you and Will Patton have a little friction,
a little bit of friction.
Yeah.
No, he's the only one who expresses it.
I'd love to watch those scenes. I'm kind and gentle. Those scenes would be. I'm really looking forward
to watch
that.
You guys just all having lunch.
Yeah, I would love to watch that too. Well, that's what Gene Siskel used to say about bad movies. He goes,
I'd rather watch these people having lunch.
Right. But this is a good show, so we like to.
You
can have lunch on the specials, the DVD specials.
Yes, we can.
But I really am looking forward to these scenes with you and Will Patton, because I got to imagine those are some powerhouse acting scenes.
Yeah.
Is he intense offset too, Will Patton?
Oh, no, he is. Yes, he is.
Really?
Yeah.
Give me Will Patton offset. What is he like off camera?
Well, okay. When you're doing a table read, when you're reading through the script for the next week's episode, and Will's he's looking at his lines and he's and he talks like this. He's always down here breathing. and he goes through his line, and you'll watch him look at a line and kind of make a face like, that sounds stupid. You can see that look on his face. So he'll come out of his mouth completely different than what's written there. It's the same intention, but it'll be reworded, and it's like, no, actually, his instincts are right. He's always right about it.
When you go to a cast party, is he like Commander Will Patton?
Oh, yeah.
Does he kick back, have a drink every once in a while?
Not once in a while.
Oh,
okay. He kicks back and has a drink often. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, he's that guy.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Now I'm really liking him.
He's got a problem.
He's like one of those guys, like, he tells a joke and you better laugh.
Yeah, right. I get that sense. Yeah. You're like Will Patton's telling a joke.
And
it was fun.
What about the chicken? And by the way, the writers of the show are great.
Yeah, right.
But Will, but Will has great ideas as
no,
well.
No, no, sure,
he's,
sure.
It's a collaborative
he's got his
process.
Character in
it
his
is.
Head.
And he does,
listen,
yeah.
This is what people need to understand about when someone says an actor doesn't like a line. Because the actor builds his character in their bodies.
Right,
like
exactly.
You inhabit this character, and
right.
You're like, well, I don't know if my character would say that. I mean, I'll
right.
even I even tell you, I read a script by someone who wrote like this, like, he's an Emmy winner. He's
mm-hmm.
a great writer.
Mm-hmm.
And I read it, and I'm like, I don't think this guy would say that, though.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Maybe he would. Maybe he would. Maybe you're wrong, whatever. It happens.
Right.
It happens. It's a collaborative.
Yeah. It is collaborative.
Right.
Absolutely.
That's great. And Will Patton's been around forever. He's
yeah.
probably, he's done, he knows what works and what doesn't probably by
no,
this
no,
point.
No, sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, he's got really good instincts.
Yeah,
yeah,
he's a great actor.
Him. Yeah.
He kind of reminds me, he's like a younger Bill Devane for me. William Devane.
Oh, you're a big William Devane guy.
I love William Devane.
Do you know?
I love William Devane. I'll never forget during the whole movie for Space Cowboys, I showed him, during the whole movie, he chews gum. Every single fucking scene. Serious scenes, firing people.
He's got a...
ripping on people, chewing gum.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's great. Now, I was wondering, you know what? Did you turn this movie down? I've not heard of this anybody.
Okay.
It just seems like something they would...
Okay.
Hollow Man.
Hollow Man. Oh, no. I've never
Hollow
even...
Man 2?
Nah.
They didn't go to you for that either?
They didn't come to me for that, no. Which
no.
is just
You'd
fine.
Be perfect for
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Which is just
yeah,
fine.
Yeah, right.
That was Kevin Bacon, right?
Yeah.
The first
one was Bacon. The second one was Christian Slater.
Christian Slater.
Yeah.
Oh, it was okay.
Poor Christian.
I didn't see the second one, but after the first one, I was like, no, I could have... I would, yeah, no, it's fine.
Yeah, Christian... I feel bad for him. He's a talented actor.
He is.
Who... is not doing a lot of acting. I'm
yeah, he's great, isn't he? Yeah.
He reminds
yeah.
you know who else is like him that I really, really like is and he just doesn't get good scripts is what's his name from Blood and Wine with Nicholson and Lopez.
Stephen Dorff?
Stephen Dorff.
Dorff is great.
I love Stephen Dorff.
We don't see enough of him either. You are right.
And he doesn't. And when he gets films, they're not giving him the right film.
Yeah.
I was just talking to Lee yesterday about how Ethan Hawke's developed into a great leading man.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't used to be a huge Ethan Hawke fan. I thought he was a better character actor,
yeah.
like a Dorff was.
He
and like
overdoes
those guys
it a little
was.
Bit. But...
And
yeah.
now I think Ethan Hawke, ever since Tape, has been outstanding.
Yeah.
And he's a real leading man. And I think guys like Dorff and Slater, I think they could pull that off too. They're not getting the scripts.
Yeah. I'm going
to agree. Plus, those movies went straight to video.
Well, that's what
fishing,
I'm talking about.
Camping,
not getting those scripts. They're not getting those scripts, you know?
I'm thinking of the Tim Conway.
Oh, that's right.
Dorff goes fishing. Dorff
oh,
plays golf. Dorff invades the ball.
Sorry,
I
ruined your little joke.
I know.
Your little Dorff joke.
That's okay.
And you've been working on that all day, too.
Look how proud I was of
that. You've worked with Tim Burton.
I have on Batman Returns.
Batman Returns.
That was my first.
Was that an interesting set to be on?
Was that your first? That
was like
my first
big movie.
Okay.
Exactly.
So what was like that? What was that like for you? You walk onto this massive $100 million movie.
Yeah. Right. And it was highly anticipated. And meeting Tim Burton for the first time. Well, just getting the job alone was hilarious. I was referred to the stunt department because I could put my legs behind my head. Remember the contortion?
Yeah, right.
Yes.
Right.
Because you play a clown, right?
And I'm a clown, right?
Yeah, right.
So there's this Red Triangle Circus gang. So
yeah.
stuntman Bob Yerkes, legendary in the business, he helped the stunt coordinator cast up all of the circus acts for this movie. And he knew that I was a contortionist. So he sent my name to the stunt office and said, yeah, I know a guy who can like bend up funny. So bring him in, right?
Yeah.
So I go in to meet with the stunt office. And so... Hi, I'm Doug Jones, and I'm here to... So I bend up like, waka, 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 yada, yada, yada. Here's my leg behind my head. And so they're like, wow, that's interesting. So the guy said... So the stunt coordinator says, hey, hang on here. I'm going to go get somebody. I want you to meet him.
Yeah.
Goes out of the room, comes back in with Tim freaking Burton, right?
Wow.
So I wet my pants. And he says, oh, hey, so Doug, why don't you show Tim what you just showed me? So, waka, 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 yada, 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 here's my leg behind my head. And Tim was like, wow, that's great. Okay, we're going to go in the next room and talk about you, but hang on here for a second. So they went in the back room and left me sitting there for 3 minutes, like,
yeah,
terrified.
You're like, what's going on here?
And they come back in.
Are they calling the mental hospital?
right, exactly. And they come back in, and Tim says, great, you got the part. I'm like, the part? I thought I was here for a sight gag to do like a one-day whack-a-whack.
Right.
And it turns out that I was on the movie for 3 months as one of the Red Triangle Circus
gang. Yeah, you get your ass kicked.
Thin clown.
Yeah.
By Michael Keaton. Is that Michael Keaton that kicks your ass, or a stunt double?
There is a combo platter. Yeah.
Combo platter. Okay. Now, when you're getting your ass kicked by Michael Keaton, is he good at it or what?
Yeah. No,
he had to be. He trained up, you know.
Yeah, no. I know he trained and stuff, but it's like, what is getting your ass kicked by Michael Keaton like?
Yeah,
that's what I want to know. Does he crack a little joke like here and there?
Those funny guys, you know, that come from comedy. You think, oh, they must be a kick to work with.
Yeah, right.
Half of them are almost boring off camera. You know what I mean? It's true.
Yes.
Yeah,
I'm boring. A lot of comedians are not.
Are just not on.
But see, this is the thing. Where I work, people find out I'm a comedian, and they're like, oh, why aren't you telling lots of jokes?
Tell me
you're like
funny.
That? Yeah, well, no, but it's not like that. But, like, why aren't you, like, making all kinds of – because you would hate me if I did that. If the people who are on all the time.
You don't
– people don't want to be around someone like that. I used to be like that. I would want
to be around Robin Williams.
He does not shut off all the time.
He doesn't shut off. No. You've met Robin?
On Hook.
You did Hook.
I was an extra. I was having a bad year. And
you were an extra in good movies.
Yeah, but I was an extra in good movie. Yeah,
right.
But I was one of the pirates I worked on that for 3 months. But
were you in the scenes with the Glenn Close cameo?
Yeah, you were.
That's great.
Yeah, I was down. I was not on the ship. I was down on the dock.
Right.
But that was quite. I did not recognize that woman.
Dave Crosby's in the movie. Yeah, right. Isn't that crazy?
Met him too. Yeah, it was a great fun time, and I got to meet Spielberg then.
Yeah. And what was Robin like?
Robin,
you've done a couple Spielberg things.
Yeah, you've gotten around with Steven.
But
Robin Williams was like, if he's got someone listening, he is cracking jokes and doing voices.
Well, that whole movie had to be like that because Dustin Hoffman's like that too. He's always on.
It was really a fun set to be on for sure. And the pirates were all cast up. They found all the extras from biker clubs
and
pirate clubs that actually go out on the ocean. And
Bob Hoskins, is he fun too?
Oh yeah.
Everyone's on that.
Sweetheart of a nice guy.
So people. Tell me about these pirate clubs. People go up.
They do it. They do it.
They have actual ships, and they go out and dress and act like pirates.
They do. They do.
Do they R&P? Do they rape and pillage?
R&P. I didn't know there was an acronym.
We call it in the biz.
Cosplay R&P. Yeah. We all got our lingo.
I know there was an acronym for that. Not that I know of. I can't speak for them. I don't know. But they're actually a bunch of nice guys that just look really scary, with tattoos.
They're not like the Hell's Angels.
They're like Civil War reenactors.
Right. Civil War reenactors than Sons of Anarchy.
Totally.
Right.
Okay. Totally.
Right. That's great. And so you did Batman, you did Batman Returns, and then I know you did Men in Black, right?
Men in Black 2. Yes, two. Right. Yeah.
Was that like a big fun time too or what?
Oh, yeah, I was a minor player in the post office when Will Smith comes to collect Tommy Lee Jones and tell him, here's who you used to be and here's what you used to do. And you're working with aliens right now and we all reveal ourselves to be alien. And I was the one that looked like Joey Ramone.
Right.
They made me up to look like. So I pulled half my head off and had a tiny little bald head under there that was mechanical. And that was great.
Did you
fun.
Feel like Tommy was having fun on that movie?
Tommy Lee Jones?
Yeah.
Having fun?
That's all you need to say. Okay, about right.
I'm not sure.
He seemed like
he wasn't sure why he was there.
Have you worked with the Farrelly Brothers?
Farrelly Brothers. Yes. Stuck on You.
Stuck on
You.
That's right.
We love Stuck on
You. Yes, I had a quick.
I think it's a hidden classic.
Highly, highly underrated movie.
Underrated classic.
I laughed my ass off watching that film. I was in one quick flyby moment when
you were an alien in that too.
I was an alien.
Yeah. That's right.
That's right.
When they go on the conjoined twins go on the movie lot.
On the porn set.
For Greg Kinnear to have his audition.
Yeah. Right.
And they end up at Cher's office.
Yeah, right.
Well, on the way there, they pass a couple of aliens, and one of the alien guys says, "Hey, great costume," to them.
Yeah,
and thinking and then they say, "You too," and they pat me on the back. I was one of those alions. Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah. Wow.
How many robots, aliens,
creatures,
monsters? You're way past counting that, right?
Right. Sure. I've been robots, aliens, animal, man, hybrids.
You also worked with M. Night, didn't you?
I did on Lady in the Water.
Yeah, he's a train wreck now, huh?
Yeah. Well, I don't. Is he? I don't know. I don't know.
His movies are no good anymore.
Well, I think once we all got used to the surprise endings, it's like we're expecting something huge.
After Earth was awful. It's really bad.
I haven't seen it yet. Yeah?
It's unwatchable. Though the worst movie I saw this year was the other night. I don't know if I want to say because you're supposed to embargo your reviews till Thursday.
Right. Now, Matthew, it's not all corrupt like that.
Yeah, right.
Well, can you can't give us a title?
I can give you a title. It's White House Down. It was terrible.
I was going to do something
clever.
Were you
going to do a little clever, funny thing?
Let's just say a certain house known for its
whiteness,
certain color, and its days of being up are behind it.
So let me ask you one more. I know you got to go to the Saturn Awards. You're dressed up like you're going to Cirque du Soleil.
It's either
Cirque du Soleil or the Saturn Awards.
Well, the rest of my outfit's
out in the
car.
Do you wear that out normally?
Oh, no.
The best?
I like his look.
No, I do too, but I'm just wondering.
I have a tailcoat and an ascot tie in the car. I'm outfitted by Clockwork Couture right here in Burbank, California. They do all my red carpet.
There is probably no one better to outfit someone for a sci-fi award show than a place called Clockwork
Couture. Well, they specialize in steampunk clothing. Yeah, which is steampunk's a big movement now. That's that Victorian
era.
If I walk
in there, am I going to get a Stanley Kubrick vibe?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And you'll see goggles for your airship, and you'll see.
We even got a plug-in for your Clockwork Couture.
That's right.
I don't know. As much as I like people dressing like individuals, if I see too many people walking around like they came from a train robbery, it's going to be kind of weird.
By the way, we'd love to have you come back sometime.
I would love to come back
anytime. You're fantastic.
Thank you.
John dies at the end.
Wasn't that fun?
Thank you for being a part of that film. I want you to come back so we can talk about that.
I was very pleased to go out and see that. And one of the actors was there, the guy that played the cop. And
Paul Giamatti.
No, not Paul Giamatti. But that was a lot of fun.
Thank you for doing the show. You're fantastic.
No, you guys are great.
This is a great fun banter. I had a great time. Anytime you want to come on by.
Pleasure's mine.
And Falling Skies, without spoiling anything, is this like we'll see you in season 4 too? Or
Here's the deal. I was hired with a 3-season option.
So in case they choose that you're a pain in the ass,
this is up to the writers. Exactly, it's totally up to the writers. But I have potential to return again. Yes,
that's great. That's great.
Yeah. So keep watching Sunday nights at 10 o'clock
on TNT.
9 o'clock Central. That's
right. What else is on Sunday nights? They got something else, don't they? Is it that rock reality show?
Oh, it's another reality show.
That's right.
The Rock is doing everything now.
By the way,
Dwayne,
congratulations. Falling Skies too, because that show's a hit.
It's a big hit.
The ratings don't move on that thing. They don't go down.
They stay consistent. That's right.
That's great. All right. Well, we're gonna come back. We're gonna come back with the writers of Cinco Paul and Ken Daurio. The writers of Despicable Me 2.
Excellent.
Horton Hears a Who. The Lorax. Despicable Me. And Doug Jones. Thank you so much. Enjoy the Saturn Awards. Are you nominated for anything?
No, I'm presenting. I'm presenting Best Makeup and Best Special Effects tonight.
That's awesome. Well, we will leave you with some Bruce Springsteen in honor of James Gandolfini yet again. Born to Run. And thank you, Doug.
Thank you.
Born to Run this time.
Welcome back to K Rock.
Yes, welcome back to K Rock. Casey Kasem counting down to the top 40 this week at number 5.
Oh man, we gotta be better than Casey Kasem, no? We're better than Casey Kasem now.
Yeah,
he's alive. Well, I know you're thinking about
it. First of all, you and me and Caesar's combined age is still younger than Casey.
I know, right? Yeah, that may be true. I think Casey's like 85, 86.
Man.
I want to say that's the, yeah, I want to say that's the age on Scooby-Doo.
This one goes out to
Shaggy.
Shaggy.
And
Robin on Justice League.
So, Doug Jones, what a great guy.
Yes.
Oh, by the way, Hellboy 3, as of now, not happening. IMDb lying yet again. I asked Doug when we were taking pictures. I asked him about Hellboy 3.
Why did they put you up on IMDb and just put rumored? Lots of things are rumored.
Right. We could rumor that we're making a movie with Clooney and Ben Affleck, and they'd put it up.
Untitled,
right.
Matthew Aaron, Clooney, Affleck
right,
project.
Right. Directed by Lee Capriss. They'd put it right up. So, but by the way, Hellboy 3, not a go. There's no even muttering of it right now. They are doing he said it was like a mini series him and Guillermo may be doing together.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, so that's great. But Doug Jones, great guest.
Great guest.
Enjoy the Saturn Awards and watch Falling Skies Sunday nights,
cool.
9 Central, 10 Eastern. Fun show. I'm about to bring in Cinco Paul and Ken Dario. And Lee's going to, unfortunately,
bow out.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I won't be getting all Lee's ha-has. You did good during that Doug Jones, though. You were on fire.
Thank you.
I thought you were on fire.
Some weeks I can't.
I think sometimes when I can tell when you're really, really into a guest.
Yes.
And you were really into Doug.
Yes.
You dug him.
Yes, but I sometimes I can't.
No one laughs at my puns. I said you dug him.
Well.
Oh, come on.
I know. I can't imagine why. Puns are always the pinnacle of humor.
Oh, Bruce Fretz is in pain right now.
Listen, I love a good tortured pun more as much as anybody, but.
Bruce Fretz is a little too punny for you?
I'm not going to feign a laugh. Yeah, Bruce. Yeah.
Bruce is a little too faint?
Yeah.
A little too punny?
Yeah.
So we're going to bring in Cinco and Ken now, right? Are we doing that now? Yeah. I'm ready.
Sometimes
I can't
think of anything funny to say.
I'm ready. I saw Despicable Me 2 last week.
Okay.
And it was a rollicking time. You know, it's one of those kids screenings, family movie screenings. They surround you with kids. And I'm just still not used to it. So I walked in and my back was hurting. And I'm about to sit down. My back's cracking. And I go, oh, fuck. Like real loudly. And all these kids are, like, right in front of me. I'm like, oh, that's no good. That's no good. But so Despicable Me 2, a really fun time. Cinco and Ken are getting set up. The first movie is maybe the cutest movie I've ever seen. The second movie is not far from it. Cuteness is definitely – I got to tell you, I don't know anyone that doesn't like these movies. They're great.
Well, thank you.
They're great.
Thank
really.
You so much, yeah.
Really. All right. So Cinco Ken?
Yes.
Cinco Ken?
Yeah.
There we go. All right. Thank you. We didn't get to meet before during the break thing. I was too busy blasting Springsteen in my ear. Okay. So, gentlemen, let's start, though. Despicable Me 2 is in theaters, of course, July 2nd, correct?
Yeah. Third.
July 3rd. No midnight showings?
Oh, there are some early shows.
You're right.
There are? Okay. Because that's like the new thing now. The new thing is like release it Wednesday at like noon.
Yeah.
So, and it'll count for the weekend
right,
box office.
Right, the box office stats by releasing it the night before.
I don't think you guys are going to need padding. I got to tell you, the last movie made $540-some million worldwide. Come on, I think we're good. And let me tell you something, the sequel is just as good as the original. It's
a really good
film. I want to get into that, but I also want to get into your guys' history because we do have a lot of people that listen to the show that want to be writers and in the entertainment business. And I know you guys have done some directing as well. Is that Ken that did the directing?
I did. I used to direct music videos. That
right.
was sort of my first
so,
gig.
So let's get into that. How did you guys get in the business separately and then together? What's the story behind that?
Well, Cinco did it the right way. So why don't you start?
All right, what's the right way, Cinco?
I started, I went to SC.
Yeah.
USC, their Master's in Screenwriting program.
Oh, you did it like the real right way.
Yeah, I did.
He knows what he's talking about.
The step-by-step bullshit way.
I learned exactly how to craft a screenplay.
And get an agent.
Yeah, exactly. And so my thesis script actually did get me an agent.
Really?
And then the next script I wrote actually sold as kind of a big spec sale. And then,
wow.
And so I was... My career sort of had begun.
How many shitty scripts did you write before a great thesis? honestly. How long did it take you to get good?
Well, I will tell you that my my original thesis script was a script called Stuck in Monday, and it was about a guy who got stuck in this day, and he was reliving the same day over and over and over. And I turned that script in December and then went to the movies two nights later.
Is this before Groundhog Day?
Yeah, I went to the movies.
It was before it. Oh, my God.
Right after I turned in my script, and I was so excited about this script. I thought, this is the one.
This is the one.
This is the one. And then I saw a trailer for Groundhog Day.
Oh.
And my world just exploded. And I just felt nauseous. And I realized I had to toss that script out. So I completely...
Oh, my God. That would be a bummer.
Yeah, started another one.
That's a great title, though, Stuck in Monday.
Stuck in
Monday.
Great.
Better than Groundhog Day. Come on.
I think so, too, actually.
And but then I wrote a new script called Head Case, and that one got me an agent. And then, yeah, and then I...
Did you see Groundhog Day, and did you think it was better or worse than your script?
It was better.
It's better.
Much better.
Harold,
it's one of my all-time favorite movies.
Me too.
Now.
It's a great movie. It's a great movie.
Perfect.
So there was... Once you got past the rage, you enjoyed the film.
Yeah, yeah. Luckily, there were 2 months
big
before
of you,
the movie
I will tell
came
you.
Out.
That is big of you.
Right?
I would have hated it just out of spite.
Yeah.
Just
rip
out of spite.
Off.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And asshole Harold Ramis snuck into your USC dorm.
Somehow, yeah. Yeah, totally ripped me off.
Yeah, right. Took your 3x5 floppy disk it was on. Okay, so Ken, what is your break?
My path was I always wanted to make movies when I was a kid.
Right,
so I did the.
You're like me. Okay,
did the Super 8 to the hair. Stop motion, right? With did all that, and right out of high school, I said, well, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
So I got a buddy, and the two of us started going to local bands. Shows here in L.A., and we kept hanging out backstage.
You lived in L.A.?
Yes.
Okay.
And we kept hanging out backstage until we got somebody to listen to us and allow us to make a music video for them.
Oh, that's cool.
And so we did not
know
what
we were...
So
what did you do, like Whiskey a Go-Go, Viper Room?
Anywhere we could go down, yeah. So
sure.
We finally found somebody who let us do it, but we didn't know what we were doing. We didn't have any equipment. We didn't have any knowledge other than messing around with our camcorders.
Yeah.
And so we went and printed up at Kinko's some fake T-shirts that said we were a company, and we kind of showed up at this show and presented ourselves as a film crew, and we made our first music video.
Yeah.
And that was the beginning of the reel, right? And so then...
How was the first music video? Since you were like, I don't have any equipment.
Considering what it was not so bad.
So
right?
What kind of equipment did you end up getting for it?
Well, we had like literally like our parents' camcorders. Like,
yeah,
this
right.
Was back when they were big.
Right, the big one.
Right,
when you
exactly.
Put the VHS in it.
VHS,
and, yeah.
With like the cool effects button you could push, gain up, and it was like looked real like film.
Yeah, right. Plus and minus.
Yeah,
yeah,
totally.
Yeah, sure.
So we did that, and then we got a guy who was in film school who like
yeah.
Was like
who knew what he was
who
doing.
Knew what he was doing and could like steal a camera for the weekend and come and help us out. And he
was he Asian? That would make
he
this
was
story
not.
So
no,
much
he
better.
He was like a surfer. He was like this.
I always imagine like the inside guy's always some dorky Asian. I love
did
it.
Did he steal it from USC?
He may have. I'm not sure.
The same awesome. Night Harold Ramis robbed
right,
USC
yeah.
Dorm rooms.
Yeah, so we did that me and my buddy did that for about 10 years. We made 100 music videos for bands before they had any money and were still living in their parents', basements.
And made $100.
And we
made
$100.
You made $1 per video?
Yeah, exactly. And so, after 10 years of
are
lugging,
any of those bands like around today?
Oh, yeah. It's like Blink-182 and Pennywise and AFI.
Really?
And
Meat World.
All these bands. We did all these guys.
Do you still know any of them?
You know, I sort of moved out of that world.
Yeah, right.
Like, it just wasn't my scene, let's say, but...
But
it
you
was
did
fun.
A Blink-182 video before they were Blink-182.
Oh, totally. Well, they were Blink-182.
Yeah,
but it was
did Joe
they weren't naked in your video?
No.
No.
Well, no, they were, but,
they were.
Just off-screen. They were just always running around naked. That was kind of their thing.
That was the thing, yeah.
It was. So, yeah, we did that for 10 years, and then finally I said, I'm tired of lugging cable all weekend long and staying up all night, and I wanted to make movies, and it wasn't happening, and that's when... I met Cinco.
I came into his
really?
Life. And I saved him from all
so
that.
What year would you say this is?
This is 97 was when we met. And
so you're selling scripts, but none of them are getting made at this
exactly,
point? They're just in limbo.
Yeah, I'm working
development
steadily,
hell.
But nothing's getting made.
And you're making music videos.
And I'm making tons of product, but not getting any.
Nothing,
nobody's
no MTV, nothing like that.
No.
So what happens? You two get together in 97. What happens?
We form a band.
Yes.
Is this true?
Yeah.
This is true.
We formed a band. We play at your great outdoor malls.
And,
really?
Area.
Yeah, it was great.
And then, we just hit it off, realized we had the same sense
what
of humor.
What kind of band?
Just a pop band.
Cheesy pop.
Covers?
Cheesy
covers,
Ken.
Some
a lot of covers.
Yeah.
Some originals.
Wait, you had some originals?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Our originals were awesome.
Yeah.
Now, did you guys do I Swear?
No, we
no,
did
you
not.
Didn't.
We did not. We played some weddings, but we never did I Swear.
You never did I Swear? Oh, no. That would have been great. Is that I Swear, is that All for One or Boys to Men?
That's All for All One.
It's All for One?
I, you would think it was Boys to Men.
No, yeah. It's the no, other black know. Guys. Yeah. It's the other black guys. Yeah. So you guys get together and you do your pop band. This is all blowing my mind. All right.
And
okay.
Then I basically say, Ken, we should write something together. Let's write
really?
A script together. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you were really enjoying spending time with Ken. What talent did you see in Ken as a writer up to that point?
That's right.
None as a writer.
But you liked his humor and you thought, hey, if we could put this on the page.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
He's a fun guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I did write one script, and I use the term loosely, script. I wrote this thing that I actually at some point showed to Cinco.
Oh, he did show that. I forgot about that.
Yeah, I did show you something.
That's how good of a friend you are. You forgot about it.
And that's when he realized, wow, with some structure and guidance and a little bit of, you know, spell check, maybe.
Oh, that's good.
This would
punctuation.
This might be something.
Yeah.
And so I think that was sort of, and our sense of
what
humor
was that
was
script? Do you remember that?
It was Surviving in Today's World
it
or something like that.
Surviving in Today's World.
Not a bad title either. No. You guys are good with titles.
Yeah.
Oh,
titles you nail.
And so, yeah, so we really did. It was about our sense of humor.
Yeah.
We hit it off. We talked about projects and movies you liked and music and stuff. And so it was kind of, you could feel that this might work.
Was it easier for you guys to work together because you already had an agent? Because I hear from a lot of people that starting as a writing team is hard, and a lot of people won't take you on if there's two of you. They like taking on single entities, if you will. So was it easier because you had an agent to get the writing team in?
It probably was easier,
it was
for,
easier
Ken.
For me. A
right,
lot easier.
Well, it's real easy for Ken. Cinco did all the work.
That's
right. Getting the agent.
I think it probably was.
The agent. Yeah.
Because we wrote our first script together, and we certainly had an outlet, a way to get it
sure.
out there to the town, and it did get out to the town, and it sold.
What did your agent say when you had a writing partner on your first and the first script that you gave him with a writing partner?
I think I'd sort of given him a heads up. I'm going to write a script with this friend of mine, Ken, and I think he was cool with it.
He was.
Because my career was kind of flatlined at that point. You know, it wasn't really going anywhere.
You didn't feel there was – you didn't feel like mixing it up would be a bad idea.
Yeah, I didn't get any resistance to that.
Okay.
And then the script sold, which is great. And then
what was the script?
It's called Special.
Special. Okay. What was that about?
And it was basically about a guy pretending to be disabled so that he could get signed an autographed football.
Well, that's
you know
adorable.
That old story.
Yeah. Didn't Jimmy Stewart do that one?
Yeah, yeah. And so.
Now, was this Ken's idea or yours? I
was
sensing Ken.
No, you
no?
would think no. Cinco.
It was my idea, but I wanted a little protection, so I brought Ken
exactly.
on.
Because when he told me this is what we should write, I said, really?
And you're like,
you
this is going to be my first script. You're going to show to your agent.
Shot, right? And I'm thinking,
Did your agent go, you know, Cinco, this Ken guy, he's a fucking pervert.
No, there was when we turned in the script, there was a lot of resistance.
There was.
And my agent said, like, the other agents at the agency, like, threw the script at him. They were so upset.
It was so despicable.
But somehow it got leaked to somebody.
Yeah.
And that somebody loved it. And then they had no choice but to release it to the whole town. And then
really?
So sort of.
Was it somebody at a studio or a director?
It was
or
a producer.
It was a producer?
Yeah, a producer got a hold of it.
And one producer said it's hot, so all of a sudden you have to.
Yeah, so then they had to send it out. And everybody kept on calling them, like, what's the script we hear about? And so they had to release it. And then MGM bought it. And then we teamed up and brought a pitch to Disney.
Yeah.
With a producer named Bo Flynn. And the pitch was Bubble Boy.
All right, now is this true you guys sing your pitches?
You know, back when we were doing a lot of pitches, it wasn't that we sang our pitches.
Yeah.
We like to incorporate music into a lot of our stories. And
sure.
So when we're in the room pitching, we just would, you know, those were the scenes that kind of would end up being the ones we would perform.
Sure.
Yeah, it's not like
a big montage scene.
Picture a guy, he's in the city. It wasn't
right.
Yeah, no. Not at all. Although that's not a bad idea.
Yeah, right.
Maybe we should
but
do
we
that.
But we would have a lot of scenes in our pitches in which characters were singing.
So for like Universal, for the first Despicable Me, was there any singing?
There was not. But for Bubble Boy, there was.
Bubble Boy, there was.
Santa Claus 2.
And the
so what's the Bubble
trip?
Boy pitch like? What was that like?
What was the musical? Oh, it was the Land of the Lost theme.
Yeah, we had the Land of the Lost thing, right?
And, you know,
and we had a big moment at the end at the wedding where he sang the Land of the Lost theme. Didn't end up in the
That's right.
picture.
We can't, you know, we need to rev up and tune our voices a little bit. But yeah, we would generally kind of always pitch those musical numbers. And that's when you would either win them over, like, this is great, or
sure.
you would see that look like, get these people out of my office.
Yeah. I think I've gotten that look.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. We had one person who said, you know, a pitch from Cinco and Ken is like dinner theater. But I don't think it was a compliment.
Yeah, you didn't know if they meant like good dinner theater Boise, Idaho dinner theater.
Right. Yes.
So then you did Bubble Boy, which was a twisted take on the original.
Yeah,
I would
the plastic
say.
Bubble.
Boy
yeah.
in the plastic bubble with Travolta. So what was the reaction like after you do that film, Bubble Boy?
Well, it was a massive critical and commercial failure.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. I wasn't going to say it. I was hoping you would.
You're not going to offend us.
Yeah, right.
Our favorite review from the Village Voice, and the opening sentence of that review was, Cinco, Paul, and Ken Daurio are racists. that was the lead for the review. So there was a lot of negativity as a result of that. But people had genuinely
were you defending how racist you weren't after that? Were you like walking around the house going, can you believe he said this?
Yeah, exactly.
I have black friends.
Right, we're good people.
Come on.
But then luckily then Disney still had faith in us.
Yeah.
And brought us on to pitch our take on Santa Claus 2.
Oh,
and that sort of.
That's a big money movie.
That's guaranteed.
Nice.
That was going to be a success.
Yeah.
And it was going to be family friendly. No racism in that.
Yeah.
Unless you're a little person. I don't know.
You do have elves in that movie.
Yeah.
but then you got that job, and that certainly helped us. And that also put us sort of on the family movie track.
Would you like to do Racier Fair again?
Yeah, I think, we have some scripts. Not necessarily racier, but maybe
right.
a little more.
I mean, even PG-13 is what
adults.
I'm saying,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly. I think we would at
we
some
would.
Point.
I mean, we're generally PG guys, as
yeah.
it is.
Yeah.
That's kind of who we are. But,
yeah.
but yeah, I think we'd like to do something a little more like special or something like that
yeah.
someday. It'd
yeah.
be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, mix it up.
Yeah.
It'd be fun, right?
Right.
So then, Santa Claus 2, big payday, I'm imagining. So that's good. You're feeling good. You're like, this is happening. When you do the Santa Claus 2, now... Is that something where you write a script and then the studio gives so many notes and Tim Allen gives notes and you kind of have to make the movie they want to make? It's not so much your movie, right? I mean, it is, and you know what I mean. It's like 50-50?
Yeah, if that.
If that?
Yeah. Yeah, that was a situation where a lot of notes, but you have to, writer, you have to learn how to survive.
You're like a hired writer at that point. You're
yeah,
a hired
absolutely.
Gun.
Absolutely. And they had a script. They had many scripts, I think, or...
They certainly had
one.
A draft, and we were rewriting the
We were
draft.
Sort of working off of that draft. So we had... We
How do
kind
you
of...
fight to keep your creativity in a situation like that?
It is totally choosing your battles and
yeah.
realizing... And very early on in our careers, we were not good at that. Or actually, I wasn't good at that. I fought everything, right? And I'm so determined to prove I was right that I almost proved myself right in the way that no one would ever hire me again.
He was very right.
I was so right that no one ever wanted us to write for them again.
But you were right.
Yeah, I was right.
But
that is the challenge. It's like, okay, we know there is a smart, funny Cinco and Ken version of this, but
yeah.
it's not going to see the light of day. So we sort of have to work with
yeah
them.
If we had a burning desire to tell the ultimate Santa Claus story,
sure,
we may have fought a little harder.
Sure.
But we just tried to make it as
so when you get a note from Disney or Tim Allen's a funny guy, I've met
yeah.
Tim, he's a great guy, but when you get a note from Disney per se and Disney says, yeah, we want a scene that's exactly like this, and you're like, man, this isn't funny, this isn't like, how do you like put your own spice into it? Do you try to,
that's
or do you just
absolute,
write the scene they want you to write?
You have to, we'll always try and make the best version of the scene that
right.
you may or may not like.
Right.
And that's really the trick is to, we'll sometimes we're going to have to do this scene. We don't get it. We don't think it's that great.
Right.
So we'll just put in whatever we can. I think and sometimes.
Yeah, we have.
Sometimes that works.
Are they ever shocked by what you put in? Are they ever like, hey, remember when we asked you for this? What the fuck's this?
Yes.
Oh, we've had an entire draft of a script and it turned out like
yeah.
that. I was going to give an example of Bad Note.
Okay.
Which is, this is when we're working on Bubble Boy.
Okay.
Turn in the first draft, all excited, and then the note is, does he have to be in the bubble? Literally have to get him out of that bubble. He cannot be in the bubble suit the whole movie. No actor is going to want to do that. So we then wrote a draft where at the midpoint,
Yeah, he
Jimmy
was, out
of the bubble and just on his own, and it was we knew that was not going to work.
It wasn't going to work.
We knew it was a nightmare, but you have to do it.
Yeah, that's
the sometimes bubble boy didn't work as a title.
Yeah, or just the boy.
Right? Yeah, right.
That's not a movie.
Yeah. All right, so then San Clair happens. Huge hit. Okay, Horton Hears a Who. You brought in to pitch that, or did they want you like right off the bat for that?
Yeah, we were Chris Meledandri, who was at Fox at the time, sort of brought us in. It wasn't a competitive thing at all. He just sort of brought us in and really wanted us to write it, and then brought us down to San Diego to meet Mrs.
And that
Seuss.
Was really the test.
The Mrs. Seuss
right.
test.
How
right.
did
could
how
we
did...
win them over?
Right.
Yeah.
So when Mrs. Seuss meets you and she loves you, and I mean, because she approved you guys, based off of which of your works, or how did you sell her?
Really, that was a case where you go down and you just kind of pitch, here's what we want to do with your story.
Yeah.
Here's how we see it. And I think the fact that we're both huge Dr. Seuss fans, it's funny because going into it, literally my favorite, not children's book, but book, was Horton Hears a Who.
Yeah, Horton Hears a Who.
Cinco knew that going in. You know, when we first got the call, he called me up and he said, hey, if we could adapt any book out there in the world, what would you want to do? And I said,
John Grisham's The Client.
Not Horton Hears a Who. And so it literally was like a dream come true. And I think she felt our love for this stuff and the fact that we didn't want to make it Cat in the Hat and push the envelope.
Yeah, she was very gun-shy because Cat in the Hat
was awful, right.
Yeah. Right.
Speaking of, that was Mike Myers. At one point, it was Tim Allen, Cat in the Hat.
Oh, it was? Yeah,
it was around the time you were doing Santa Claus, too.
Yeah. That's right.
That's right, and he dropped
out.
And
he probably didn't do it because he didn't want to be in makeup.
I wouldn't doubt it. Yeah. I don't know who would. Right. So you sell her on Horton Hears a Who. First of all, tell me what the Seuss house is like. You go to the Seuss house in San
Diego.
It's
all crooked and wacky and
really?
No, but it kind of is. I mean,
it's very Seussian.
It's very the walls obviously just have artwork all over the place, and there's
his original desk that he wrote is actually on
mounted on the wall.
Mounted on the wall as a work of art.
Oh, that's cool.
There's like ink splattered all over. It's very.
There's
cool.
like stuffed animal heads of like Seussian animal heads on the
like
wall.
Mounted on the walls.
Oh, that's
very
kind of cute.
Cool.
It's
cute.
It's fun.
It's super fun.
Those are people that like to live. They have a good time.
Yeah, yeah.
They really enjoy life.
And there
life.
Is something about sitting in that, you know, you're in there meeting with Mrs. Seuss, and you're in the room where he wrote these books.
No, I knew. You had me shitting
yourself. It was crazy. It was just, and then once that hits you there, you're trying to keep it together. It's like, wait, am I going to get emotional now? When I'm getting entertained.
I mean, you're in
you
the
were
going
to get emotional?
You're in the place Green Eggs and Ham happens, you know?
That doesn't happen every day.
Yeah, no. So you, what is her exact response after your pitch? Do you remember?
I think we sort of. She was probably pretty reserved, and then later we found out Audrey loved you. Right, we're on board, and we're
very
moving
cool.
forward. So that was
very cool. Was it a slam dunk then with the Lorax?
I would say pretty much. Yeah,
did she recommend you for the Lorax, or?
Well, she had a really good relationship with Chris Meledandri, who brought us in, and so I think she felt very safe with him and knew that he was going to take care of her.
And then she ended up feeling safe with you after Horton Hears a Who. What was her reaction after the film?
Yeah, after Horton, we actually were with her when she saw it for the first time, and she stood up and she had like tears in her eyes and said, like, I think they're going to hear us this time.
Oh.
I mean, she was really emotional and happy, and that was a great moment for us that we've made her happy, you know, and so, you know,
I can't even make fun of that. That's too cute.
Yeah,
that's too nice.
It was very
too awesome.
Cute.
And so
and
then we knew
awesome.
And actually my favorite Seuss book was The Lorax. So,
really?
So that sort of led to us approaching her.
I had
about
a question
doing
about those films. And about Despicable Me even, about any animated films. Why do we need all the big names in them nowadays? Why do we need the all-star cast? Is there a reason for it? Do you think it really helps sell the movie, or do you think with any cast these movies could work?
I think if you're Pixar and you have an established brand, you don't need it.
Right.
I think everybody else does need it.
You do.
It's part of the marketing. Yeah.
Because
you can't replace Steve Carell
going
all over the world as a spokesman for the movie.
I don't want to rip on your brotherhood of writing friends like the movie Epic, but I walk into the theater and I see 50 friggin' names like it's Ocean's 11, and no kid going to see this movie knows who Christoph Waltz is.
No.
Not one.
Wait,
how does that help sell a film for them? It blows my mind. I just don't get it.
Yeah,
I get it.
Well, I think obviously in some cases like having...
Steve Carell I get, though. That I get.
Or having Taylor Swift
sure,
in the Lorax.
No, Lorax
that
with
helps.
Zac Efron, Taylor Swift, that's a big deal.
Those things help, but generally... We don't try to choose names just for the names. You know, we try to choose people who can improvise.
Are you a part of that process?
We're around. We're involved. We can
with
you
the
know,
casting. You put in your
yeah.
Say.
We put in our put two in cents. Our we obviously don't have final say, but
absolutely. And you know, we'll say as we're coming up with characters, we'll say, you know, we really hear this voice or this
yeah.
actor, and a lot of it does come from that because. Certainly, Danny DeVito was in our head before.
He was great.
Early on as
yeah,
the Lorax.
He was great.
Just because
yeah.
he is the Lorax.
Yeah. I mean, and he's not a major star, but he's, you know.
Oh, no, right.
A perfect voice. For
right.
character.
Well, you know, but in a funny way, to the parents taking their kids to the film, Danny DeVito's the biggest star in the film.
Right. And I think.
That, listen,
sure.
I mean, just to be honest, I'm watching the Lorax. I was in the theater. I'm the oldest guy there that didn't have any kids with him, okay?
Right.
I'm by myself, okay? I knew Danny DeVito. All the parents I mean, knew Danny DeVito. None of the parents knew Ed Helms. They're like, who's the guy voicing that guy?
Right.
Ed Helms. No one knows. You know, and like Zac Efron and Taylor Swift, the kids kind of knew, some of the kids, and then some don't. I mean, you're going to get kids that go see these things anyways, especially a movie as beautiful as The Lorax. I mean, Horton Hears a Who is a gorgeous movie, but I don't think I've ever seen a more gorgeous movie animated than The Lorax,
wow.
colors-wise.
Yeah, they did an amazing job. The palette of that and the trefula trees.
That
yeah.
really was
beautiful.
Bringing that Seuss world to life.
Yeah.
Like it should be.
Yeah, that was a crazy... That is a great movie. Not to disparage your talented writing, but you could mute the movie, and it's beautiful to
sure.
look at.
Yeah,
not that I'm encouraging
no, we
muting
know that.
The movie.
Yeah.
We get that. We're okay.
Now, Despicable Me, the first one. What a huge hit, as we talked about. You had Steve Carell. And by the way, it's not a monster cast in the Despicable Me movie. It's not like all-star cast. And so I do appreciate Universal's animation department to a bigger degree and Fox because they don't seem to do that as often. It seems to be a DreamWorks thing, and I'm arguing lately that DreamWorks animation is killing the animation business. That's another argument, though.
they're making too
soon,
many movies.
Well, pretty soon they're going to be sending your writing jobs to China, too.
Yeah.
So, anyways, Universal, though.
You know, there's not much laughter from us about that.
Yeah, no. Despicable Me. Well, me, I'm fighting in it. I'm really afraid of that. But Despicable Me is this just, it's, this movie was a monster success. But not only just a monster success, I've never met anything like this movie. From parents, from 80 years old to 5 years old. I've never met anyone that didn't watch this movie and for one reason or another be completely in love with it. Parents and older parents, they love the fact, and grandparents, they love the fact of the relationship with Gru and the children.
Yeah.
Okay, the children love the children, and they love how Gru's wild antics. And do you write the movie going, how do we appeal this for everybody? Or did you just write a really great story about family and it's turned out everyone loved it? Is there a formula to it?
No, we literally, Ken and I have always just tried to write to make each other laugh.
Right.
You know, we'll assign scenes and divvy them up and then we bring them together and read them. And then the goal is to have the better pages, you know? And so literally we never thought about, like, well, what's in this for the kids or what's in this for the adults?
No, the reason...
Kind of just all for us.
The reason we took, you know, we connected with the movie in the first place was because we each have three kids.
Yeah.
And so we saw, you know, Chris Meledandri showed us these images early on, and it was just an image of a villain, just this random villain with these three little girls, stuck with these three girls. And the design was different, and they were very early sketches, and that's all they had was that spark of an idea. And there was just the one drawing where you see the villain and he's trying to rob a bank or something, and he's got the one little girl hanging on his leg and one's pulling on his jacket. And as a dad, it's like, yeah, I have been there. You know, how many conference calls have I tried to do where the kids are in the house
juggling
and I'm hiding in the bathroom
work.
Because they're going to come and get me.
Yeah.
So,
the little fingers come under the door.
So that, that was the connection for both of us, I think, early on was just
That's
like,
great.
Yeah, we get that.
You guys
character.
Get together and write? Or separate, and then you come together maybe a couple times a week? Or
no,
how does that work?
We're in the same general zone.
We're in the
same
room.
Office, but we'll discuss it. We talk through, like, here's the next 30 pages.
Yeah.
Talk through, outline it, and then say, okay, this is Ken's scene, this is Cinco's, and we assign
and
it
we
like that.
Then we go off and write
then
in
we
our
go
corners.
Off and write in our, yes, our corners, and then once we're done...
We come together and try and make each other laugh.
Yeah. That's great. I got to tell you, I was... So you go right in your corners. Do you guys write the same scene and then bring it together?
No,
or do you do
scenes.
This one and
we'll
I'll do this one and then we'll switch? And then you put in your notes, I'll put in my notes.
No,
or...
we'll write our scenes. We'll come together and we'll literally stick them together in one, you know, on one computer,
sure.
And we'll just scroll through and read them together out loud. And then we pitch out ideas for
and
each other.
And then you'll rewrite it together?
Yeah.
Or...
Yeah,
yeah. That's okay. That's cool. That's really cool.
It's very efficient. We are able to
you're
get a lot of work done quickly, yeah.
Oh, yeah, because you're basically both writing half a script.
Right.
And then rewriting it together as a team.
Yeah.
So that is efficient. That's a great way to do it. It's yeah, you guys are a machine that way. So let me ask you about Despicable Me 2 now. July 3rd or July 2nd, if your kids can be out at midnight.
Yeah.
Despicable Me 2. You knew this thing was such a monster hit. You knew the call was coming, right?
Pretty early on, yeah.
Did it like right away?
It did, and you know we were really surprised at how big a success that first one was. We did not expect, like you say, so many people come up to us and want, you know, just love the movie, and it's a lot of people's favorite movie, and
it is.
That's just
it is.
Weird. You know,
yeah.
We always liked it, but we didn't know that it was going to really resonate like it did.
But I think we did. It was maybe after that first weekend or the second weekend that.
It was sort of like, oh,
Chris Meldowney called us and said, like, you guys should start thinking about a sequel and what it would be.
Yeah. And we did, you know, when we wrote the first one, we were thinking, well, here's the movie and we're done. And we weren't thinking sequel. But then once,
right. Is that Chris's polite way of saying we're going to be calling you with the, we want your sequel ideas or?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We
offers coming, so get ready.
Right.
Yeah.
And so we started, you know, bouncing ideas around. And as soon as we did that. It was like, we have this guy who used to be an ex-villain. He's now a dad. Is he still a villain? What does that mean? Does he have to drive the kids to school?
Yeah, right.
So once we realized we have this great family and this great people to play in, we were pretty excited.
I loved it. I'll tell you why I love this idea, too. I'll tell you why the sequel works for me so well. This movie could work as anything. It ends up working really well as an animation. But this is how talented the writers you guys are. This could have worked as live action. This could have been a sitcom for 5 years on TV. I mean, it could have been. That's how good the storyline is, where you could have gone so many directions with it. I mean, it's just, it's really smart. And I think you have to lend that to the success of how, not just the success, how well written the first one is, because it easily sets you up for this. And by the way, you could probably now set yourself up for 2-3 more movies. I mean, just saying. I mean, it is a great idea that lends itself to a lot of scenarios as a viewer you want to see, as you know.
Well, thanks. I mean, it is a great idea, and not to take credit away from us, because we love to take the credit.
Yeah.
Kind of when this whole thing came together, it was this great story that we totally connected to, and then we had these amazing designs. You know, the world was just such a cool place to be in, with the gadgets and the cars and the weapons, and you know these artists, these French artists and American, they designed this really cool world that was just fun to be in, and you know the directors Chris and Pierre, they came in and. They got that like Looney Tunes quality into the movie with the Minions.
The Minions.
And that was their baby.
The Minions were their baby.
You know,
really? The Minions wasn't something you had in the script originally?
We had mentioned that Gru had Minions, but we certainly hadn't
conceived of them like that. Not the animation style, not the energy.
That was their genius.
And so it really was this kind of like family thing that happened where, you know, we had the story, we had... these artists, we had Chris and Pierre who had this vision for these Minions and the slapstick and
what
the fun.
What a collaborative process.
It was just
That's
a great,
great
Yeah, it
great
has to get, you know, you, it's 3 years of making the movie.
Really?
So you all have to work together. Even though they're in Paris, you know, we have video conferencing two or three
times. Oh, wow, they're making
week.
This film in Paris.
Yeah, they make it in Paris. So 24, round the clock, somebody's working on the movie.
And you guys have voices then here, right?
Yeah, most
right.
of the recording was done here.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
That's a great, that's awesome. The Minions, I mean... Man, kids love those things.
Yes, they do.
I like them. I think they're funny. I got to tell you, I watched this movie and, like, I don't want to like it. I'm like, fucking cute. Why is this cute? Like, I'm at that age, like, you know, 29 turning 30, so I'm, like, bitter. I'm the bitter artist. I'm like, you know, I'm that guy. I'm like where you guys were when you were just getting Bubble Boy around
right,
then, you know?
Yeah.
And you would have watched this movie and been like, yeah, whatever. Cute. But it is. It's great. It really is. It's a movie that just makes you smile, like, the whole way through. Even I'm fighting it, and I'm like, what happened with Ben Bratt? They brought in Ben Bratt to replace Al Pacino.
Yeah.
What's the deal with that? Do we know? I heard Al was a little difficult.
We don't know exactly. All we know is...
I didn't find him... I think Al difficult. It just ended up being he saw the movie and and he had imagined, I guess, in some way, and so went separate ways, and then fortunately Ben Bratt.
Ben was good.
He was amazing.
He was good. He was really good.
He stepped in literally at the last minute. Just...
But were you worried about a release date and stuff at that point? Is the studio worried?
Yeah, it was a concern because it's like, oh my gosh, you know, the movie's basically done.
Yeah, right.
And then so you have to bring somebody in and they have to match the animation and the performance. But also, you know, he had to bring his own stuff
to it
too.
See, but this proves my point, I think. Al Pacino doesn't sell more tickets for this movie. And Ben Bratt's just as good as I think he ever would have been. I don't think it matters sometimes.
Yeah.
I really don't. And Ben was he's really good in this movie.
He is really.
I mean, the character he plays, I'm not going to ruin anything, spoil anything, but it's great. And the setup at the mall is great. It's a really fun setup.
Oh,
it's really fun. Thanks. Kristen Wiig.
Oh,
great pickup there, though, right?
So
yeah,
great.
We love Kristen Wiig so much.
She was a
I'm
lot
telling
of fun,
you,
I bet.
She, yeah, writing for her is a joy, and then seeing her take your words and
make them way better.
It was great watching her play something other than the plucky love interest. She wasn't plucky.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm fine with her being the love interest, but it was nice for her not to be plucky and, like, you know, down on her luck all the time. She was the ass kicker.
Yeah.
You know, Gru's actually the plucky love interest.
That's right.
In a weird way, right?
Yeah.
I'm watching this film, and I thought you guys could write a great romantic comedy. Do you think you guys could do that?
I totally think we could. Actually, one of my first scripts that sold was a romantic comedy.
Yeah.
We have not done a thing since then. Although Claus 2 was a little romantic comedy.
Yeah, sure.
But, yeah.
But, like, a straight-out romantic comedy.
Yeah. And it was... It's sort of surprising to us how well a lot of the romance in this one works.
It works really
because
well.
Because it's, you know, it's not easy. It's an animated movie.
It's an animated movie.
Like, kids are going to be, you know,
I was really surprised how well it worked.
Yeah. But, like, Carell and Kristen both did an awesome job of, like, making those characters, you know, they're playing the attraction and the gradual attraction. It was very... It's fun to watch.
It worked real well. It worked really well. It was very believable. Were they in the same room? They're doing each other's lines?
Not
never.
More.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It's crazy that anybody sounds like they're really talking to the same the character across them because they're all done separately on different sides of the continent sometimes. You know,
we play a little bit. Like, Kristen would get to hear what Steve had done, you know, and he would get to hear what she had done. So that would sort of inform their performances. But, yeah, they're not playing off each other at all.
I'll tell you what, the genius of that Minions thing again, too. my nephew is 1 year old. He's 17 months. He loves those fucking Minions. He's like, he's not even old enough to talk. He hasn't said a word.
Yeah.
He hasn't said one word, but he loves the Minions. And actually, I kind of blame you two for him not talking because he sounds like a Minion now.
Well, there you go. Right.
So it's kind of your fault, but it's okay. We're still friends.
He just goes, Beto, like that.
Yeah, he does it like that.
Yeah, someone said it was like, someone called it they're the greatest marketing tool since Star Wars.
Well, that
like
was,
that's
the cynical argument that everyone's like, oh, you made these cute little things to sell toys. But do add to the movie.
Oh, of course. They were really not made. I guarantee you that.
They weren't.
From what I know of Pierre Coffin, he was not thinking of selling toys
and
or anything.
The first movie,
fun.
There were no toys.
I love the little subplots with them, though, by the
way.
Yeah,
they're just fun. You know, they're little Marx Brothers-like sidekicks.
And that wasn't in the original scripts, though, right?
Well, no. Most of those fun little things did come from the directors.
That's
they really
great.
Did. You know, we had them in there as minions, and they would have little jokes, and we wrote them in English, you know, and then they took them and just, I mean, that's an animator's dream to have characters.
It really
does
have that French comedy vibe
to it. Once we knew we had them, then we could write them in and use them.
So this time you definitely minioned it up because there are a lot of minions in this movie. I will say a subplot of this movie revolves around the minions.
Yes.
It's a very big component of the film. Down to the final 20 minutes, which is like minion hell, you will.
Yeah. World War Minion.
Yeah, right. It's a World War Minion. And it is a crazy last 20 minutes. I got to tell you, this film was just, it's bonkers. It's a great ride. You guys keep being successful. I mean, Hop was a success. You guys, everything you guys are doing is just turning out really well. Knock But yes, knock on Joe Montaigne tables here. And thank you for coming by Tay Chicago, by the way. Joe and Arlene appreciate it. We all appreciate it. We love having you guys on. Despicable Me 2 is July 3rd. It's a movie that you have to see, and you have to see family too. I'm telling you, as a cynical, bitter, not getting paid in the business 29-year-old, it is a really fun film. And I would go with my 29-year-old friends to see it. I don't even have kids to bring. I would go with my friends to see it. Awesome. And anyone that listens to this show knows I don't BS about my film reviews, as Roland Emmerich is well aware of. Thank you guys so much. What's in the future? Anything lined up?
We have a movie we're working on right now that's going to come out summer 2015.
Okay.
It's a long time for these to come out.
Right.
We are not allowed to discuss it.
Is that an animated film?
Yes.
Animated.
We've
it's an original.
Lined up.
It's an original, and
yes.
It's animated.
Yeah.
More music?
There may be.
We're going to have some jams?
There may be some music, I think.
All right. Jam session.
Yeah.
Do you have anyone signed on for it?
Not yet. They're very close. I mean, we're hoping that in the next couple months
they'll make an announcement.
So that then we can speak freely.
Okay, well, we'd love to have you on then to speak about it.
Sounds good.
I would love to hear about it.
Excellent.
Thank you guys so much. Anything else you guys need to promote?
No, we're just going to go get some pizza.
Okay. Hey, the mini deep dish. Are you really going to have something right now? You got to get the mini
deep
dish.
I'm looking for an Italian beef sandwich.
I wanted to
try one of those.
Good. It's really good. I got my chopped salad over there since I got to get in
shape. You're eating healthy.
Well, I want to be on camera. You guys want to be off camera, so fuck you. You have the talent to be off camera.
That's right. We've been built to be
I have the talent. Not even to be on camera, but it's easier to BS your way. Thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
You guys were the best. Ken Dario and Mr. Cinco Paul, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, guys. And we are going to be back next Wednesday with an all-new show from 603 North Hollywood Way here at Tay Chicago. Arlene, Joe Montaigne, thank you very much. And Doug Jones, also our first guest today. Watch Falling Skies on TNT Sunday nights, 10/9 Central. And Despicable Me 2 in theaters July 3rd. Thank you very much, and see you guys next week.